That night I rode into town leaving Cronin Wilcox to ponder my proposition. Like any good businessman, he would let me know his answer in a couple of days. Not to be outdone as a businessman myself, I decided to apply a little pressure to his decision. Instead of going to Lindley's or the Lady Luck, my usual playing rooms, I rode straight to the Imperial Club on the Black Morgan and hitched in between two fancy Surreys. In spite of my appearance, work clothes and slouch hat, the mention of my father-in-law's name got me past the door and into the gaming room. I more or less buffaloed my way into the biggest game in the place. Without making a complete ass of myself, I made sure the message got back to Cronin Wilcox by way of his friends and business associates. His son-in-law, Mr. Miller Crow, could be as crude as a bed tick. After four or five reckless hands of draw poker, I gathered up my money. A short time later, I saw Melvin Bracker, one of Wilcox's bunch, watching me from the bar, and I knew he would bust a gut getting to old Cronin with the story. As soon as I got to Lindley's, I settled down and became as mannered as a gentleman. I reckon it's all in how you want to play it. I'd just about made up what I'd intentionally lost at the Imperial Club when Dave Mather showed up with a feller I'd never seen before. He was a big man wearing a strapped-down 44 and gold braiding around his hat. Anybody still wearing Gorilla Tack now that the war was over, I figured to be either plain stupid or looking for trouble. I was right both ways. Mather caught my eye and nodded me to the bar. I could tell by the way he gestured that it would be something on the sly, so I waited a couple of games before going over. Huh? I stood beside him without saying anything until after I ordered a drink. With me standing on one side of Mather and the big fella on the other, we talked between us by watching the mirror.
Frank, this here's Miller Crow from Nebraska. Crow, this here's Frank Reno from Indiana. He asked me where he could find a good hand. I thought of you right off.
Mather tipped his hat in the mirror and left without saying another word.
I reckon you've heard of me.
No offense, but no, I haven't.
No matter. You've heard of some of the work me and my boys have done. Stagecoaches, payrolls, that kind of thing.
Not knowing how to reply, I just nodded my head.
We mostly work in Kentucky and Indiana, but I got a big job coming up close to here. I need a good horseman. Mather says you're one of the best.
I'm not a horseman. I'm a horseman. There's a big difference.
Either how you say it, I need horses.
I'd dick a horses some. What will you need?
I'll need 6 good horses 10 miles outside of Gallatin over in Davies County. You know that area?
I do. It's full of troops. Has been for a while.
That's right. Once a month, them troops get paid. All in cash.
I understand.
You interested?
I dick her horses and I do deliver them, but they won't be cheap.
How much?
The kind of horses you want and the place you want them brought to? We're talking 400 apiece.
You work alone?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I have a partner.
That's damn high, especially if it's just you by yourself.
It ain't that high, considering. Not that you would, but just suppose you and your boys happen to break a law on the way to get those horses, and about the time y'all show up, so does a posse. 400 a head sounds real cheap if I'm staring up a rope.
Reno turned and faced me. I didn't like him talking straight to me, but he'd already started. I glanced around to see who might be watching.
I like your style. We'll do a lot of business together.
Just when are you wanting these horses?
I say we meet here in 3 weeks and work it out.
2 weeks from now, I'll start coming here every night for a week. If you don't show, I'll figure it went wrong. Fair enough?
Oh, I'll be here. Just get some good horses.
I turned to leave.
Oh, one thing I want to tell you, Crow. You know that bank robbery over in Liberty a while back?
I turned back and looked at him with no expression. Right inside my shirt sat the 44. I was 1 second away from ripping buttons and slinging iron.
I heard something about it.
That's one me and the boys did.
Like your hat.
I turned and headed for the door as he raised a shot glass of whiskey high in the air in a toast. Faces turned toward him from behind their poker hands. I lowered my hat on my forehead, keeping my hand to my face as I left.
God bless Dixie!
I started to call off the deal with Reno as soon as I found out Quiet Jack Smith was in jail in Abilene, but I was still waiting to hear from old Cronin about our family situation. His couple of days was going on 2 weeks, and I was getting restless anyway.
I decided to see it through. I got word to Hickok in Hayes City and asked him to forward some money on to Abilene for Jack's fine. Seems Jack had gotten drunk, pistol-whipped an ill-mannered bartender, and emptied a spittoon in his face. Jack was a real stickler about manners, especially when he was drunk. I sent Hickok's money to him through a Teamster line, and sure enough, Jack showed up at the Lucky Lady a week later, ready to work. I spotted him $100 and told him to stick around till I was able to get things ironed out. In the meantime, I was getting closer and closer to Jeannie, and with everything else I had going on, it was starting to scare me. This was not a good time for me to go falling in love with my wife. Being with her, sharing that warm feather bed, and sometimes just holding her and watching her sleep, was pulling on feelings inside me I couldn't deal with right then. What made me even more scared was the way she'd taken to me. Old Cronin Wilcox was acting more peculiar every day. The message I sent him from the Imperial Club seemed to make him hesitate on my proposition instead of jumping to get rid of me. I noticed him watching every move Jeanine and I made. I didn't know what was going through his mind, but I didn't like it. I even wondered if maybe he had planned to have me killed or something. With everything I had going on right then, I'd gotten jumpy as a squirrel. About the time I got ready to set up the deal with Reno, Cronin Wilcox came up behind me one morning while I saddled my Morgan.
I've decided to take you up on your offer, but I have one problem.
What's that?
How do I know you won't come back anytime you damned well please?
Because we'll put it on paper. You have your lawyer write it up and I'll have mine look at it.
You have an attorney?
When your man gets it drawn up, have him send it to Morris Fitch over in Carthage on my behalf. When Fitch approves it, we got a deal.
And the money?
I have the first $10,000 already waiting for you. As soon as you sign the agreement that my wife and child have an irrevocable trust set aside for them, I'll drop the money in your hand.
You're full of surprises, Crow. I'm glad we're not leaving this to a gentleman's agreement.
There's no such thing when it comes to business, Mr. Wilcox. I think we both agree on that. I turned to face him and shoved my hat back on my head. Just because you're sitting on top of the hill doesn't make you any better than me. You just got started sooner. Maybe you and your bunch can work among yourself and pretend it's all honorable. But that's just because you got all the money in the world. I'm the outsider here. Same as you'd be if we was dealing with my people.
No, Crow. Don't try to compare yourself in any way with decent people. You're dirty water that seeped in while we weren't looking.
Then I reckon you should have been looking. Because I'm here to be dealt with. My blood is your blood. Will be from now on. Whatever decency and goodness you think you know, you better be ready to teach to my child. Whether you like it or not, that's what I'm buying here.
Cronin stepped back as I swung into the saddle.
I'll see that your name is never breathed in this household. You'll never lay eyes on your child. You hear me, Crow?
I smoothed the reins in my hand and looked down at him. Don't you reckon I already know that? Look at me, Mr. Wilcox. Look at the life I lead. I doubt I'll be around to see how my child turns out. It won't be long before they'll be pitching sod in my face and you'll be giving Jeanine's hand to some decent feller. Get past it, Mr. Wilcox.
Since Quiet Jack was living on the $100 I'd spotted him, I had him check around and find out who raced horses with Wilcox. At the same time, I had him passing the word around the auction barn that my Black Morgan was one fast son of a bitch. Instead of rain breaking the Morgan the way I should have, I let him bully and boss me as much as he pleased. As far as I was concerned, this horse was no keeper anyway. I could straighten him out later if I wanted top dollar for him, or I could run him through the auction same as the last owner. Anybody knows a Morgan is a fine, strong animal with more than just a respectable amount of speed. But as far as racing, putting a Morgan up against a Virginia-bred runner or an English or a Kentucky slickback, for that matter, was pure foolishness. Still, it was just a couple of days before Jack's story about my Morgan came circling back to me at the Lucky Lady. One evening, while I waited to hear from Frank Reno about our deal, Melvin Bracker showed up at the crowded bar with another of Cronin Wilcox's bunch. I knew they were looking for me. They looked as out of place in the Lucky Lady as I'd looked in the Imperial Club. I never let on that I saw them till they worked their way right up next to me.
Well, look who's here.
I turned toward Bracker and nodded respectfully.
Philip, I don't think you have met Mr. Miller Crow. Mr. Crow, this is Philip DeBow.
We exchanged nods and I went back to sipping my rye. I saw how Bracker glanced at the bow before speaking to me.
Philip and I were just discussing you and your horseflesh business. Perhaps you can tell us something?
Sure, what's that?
Well, Philip tells me that around the auction bonds, they're saying you have a Black Morgan that outruns track horses. I told him that must be a mistake.
No mistake.
Come now, Mr. Crow. I certainly don't want to dispute your word, but really, a Morgan that outruns racehorses?
Hold on, Philip. I won't witness your questioning Mr. Crow's word. If he says it's so, then it is. Right, Mr. Crow?
By God, my Morgan is right out front there at the hitch rail. If you doubt what you heard about him, go get your fastest track runner and bring it on. We'll run from here to Main Street and back, and the winner gets $5. I slapped $5 on the bar like it was a small fortune.
$5? It seems hardly worth the effort.
$10 damn.
Well, hold on, Mr. Crow. I would not risk ruining track runner by racing through the street here. If you want to put your horse against mine, bring it to the track Sunday. I'm sure I can risk $10 if you can.
Well, now, wait a minute. I don't know about running him on a circle track. I've always raced straight out.
Then I guess you don't know what you're talking about, saying a Morgan can beat a racehorse. The only way you could know is by racing on a track.
I'm afraid he's right. You should bring the Morgan to the track Sunday and prove yourself.
Bracker turned and the two of them walked out looking as if they had set up some ingenious scheme to take my money and make me look a fool. I slid my glass across the bar and smiled to myself. Glancing in the mirror, I noticed Dave Mather looking back at me from a few places down. He tipped his hat and smiled in the mirror as if to say he knew I was getting ready to put the screws to Bracker and DeBo. I shook my head. Later that night, before I headed back to the Wilcoxes, Frank Reno showed up and we laid our plans for the horses he needed on the Gallatin job. I started to have what you might call a scheduling problem. Between the Reno deal, old man Wilcox and the trust for Janine and the baby, and the horse racing scheme I planned for Sunday, it would take some tight moving to take care of everything. For some reason, I felt it necessary to do all three as quick as possible. On the way out of town, I stopped by number 3 Missouri Avenue to let Quiet Jack Smith know how it was going with Reno. Jack had already gathered the horses we needed. We figured if Reno never showed, we could always run them back through the auction and turn a small profit. What Reno was buying was not just horses. He could have done that on his own. He was hiring me because he wanted someone he could count on to be there waiting no matter how hot the situation. If it went well, they could change horses with all the time in the world. In that case, any horseman would do. The reason Mather had referred me was in case the chase got too close coming out of Gallatin. In a tight spot, I would deliver them horses right through a running shootout if that's what it took. Not that I owed any loyalty to Reno. I just wouldn't get paid otherwise. I found Jack coming out the door with a whore under each arm, not wanting to interrupt anything. I laid 3 fingers down the side of my leg, the gorilla signal that everything was going as planned, and kept riding. I rode extra quiet into the barn that night. After feeding the Morgan, I trimmed a lantern and walked all the way to the breeding barn, which was nearly a half mile from the house. Inside the barn, old Jethro sat on a bale of hay with a 10-gauge shotgun across his lap. He started to stand as I walked toward him, but I waved him down with my hand.
How's it been going?
He nodded and pointed toward a breeding stall.
Yeah, they's been at it most of the afternoon. Even he ain't brought her in, she can't be brought in.
I stepped over and held up the lantern. Inside the dark stall, my mare shook out her mane. Beside her, Jethro's fastest stallion, called Star of Dawn, looked up at me with a muzzle full of hay and kept chewing on it as I reached in and rubbed his ears.
Seems a shame, old buddy. After all you done for her today, she's gonna get you on that track Sunday and rip you a new ass.
I walked back to Jethro and handed him $50. I sat down beside him and took out a pint bottle of Eagle Spray rye whiskey. He shoved the money into his trousers with one hand and reached for the bottle with his other.
Master Wilcox ever get wind I bred that stallion out behind his back, he skinned me sure as hell.
I reckon $50 is worth risking a skinning, ain't it?
I brought this old goose banger like you asked me to.
Good, let me see it. I checked it over. It hadn't been fired in a long time. I gave it back and handed him two shells from my shirt pocket.
First chance you get, take this thing out and fire around through it to make sure it works all right.
Sure.
Then Sunday, I want you to be in the woods just behind the track. I'm going to be riding in one of the races. When you see me riding, I want you to wait till I get just past you on the last lap. You understand?
You ain't wanting me to do nobody harm, is you?
Oh, nothing like that. As soon as I ride past on the last lap, I want you to fire this thing straight up in the air and light out of there.
What the hell for, Master Crow?
I fished a roll of money from my pocket and peeled off some bills.
For $50, that's what for.
I saw a light come on in his eyes. He didn't reach for the money.
I asked you what for, Master Crow.
I saw a sly grin creep across his face. I grinned back and peeled off more bills.
For $100, that's what's for. I ain't gonna run him, and that's all there is to it. The horse is bit sore.
I turned as if to walk away.
I'll be damned if you ain't.
Quiet Jack spun me around and slammed me against a stall gate. Jack cut a striking figure in that silver-gray suit and shiny top hat. Bracker and DeBow stood 10 feet away, enjoying every minute of it. Jack held me by my coat lapel, damn near lifting me off the ground.
I wager $2,000 with these gentlemen on your damn Morgan. Now, either you run him, or I'll reach straight up your ass and jerk your brains out.
I swear to God, Mr. Smith, the horse's mouth is too bit sore to run. You rode him yourself, am I lying?
I had insisted Jack take the Morgan out around the barn in front of Bracker and DeBow. The big plug wouldn't rein at all. He thrashed at the bit like it was setting his mouth on fire. Jack turned me loose roughly and rubbed his chin like he was wiping sweat. I was truly impressed. He played his role to the hilt. Bracker and DeBow loved it.
Gentlemen, you see the spot I'm in here. What can we do?
Come now, Mr. Smith. A bet is a bet. If Mr. Crow doesn't raise his horse, I'm afraid you will lose by forfeit.
Jack spun back toward me, his finger pointing like a dagger.
Then you're running that blasted horse.
We've seen the horse is clearly bit sore. I'm afraid racing him would be dangerous for every horse in the race.
Crow! You sold me on how good a horse that Morgan is. Now I've got my money on the line. You're a horse dealer. You better come up with a horse that can run that race right now.
Jack spun back toward Bracker and DeBow.
I plead with you as gentlemen to allow us to substitute another horse.
Bracker and DeBow shot each other a smug glance, then turned toward me.
I don't have anything to run. You've seen my whole string. They're all auction stock.
I'll wager was on the Morgan, but if you can provide another animal, I feel it only fair to allow Mr. Smith a sporting chance. What do you say, Mr. DeBow?
I've seen Mr. Crow's stock. I doubt we're actually giving Mr. Smith a sporting chance.
Damn you, Crow!
Now, hold on, Mr. Smith. I do have one hell of a riding mare that's as good as...
A riding mare? I'm winding up betting $2,000 on a riding mare?
Don't forget, we're giving you 5-1, same as on the Morgan.
I don't want to do this.
Bracker and DeBow couldn't hold it back any longer. They left the stable strutting like peacocks. When they were out of sight, Jack leaned toward me.
How'd it do?
I winked and laid 3 fingers across my forearm. It was going as planned. I reckon I was a little ashamed riding out onto the track. Not of my bay mare, but of the way I treated her. Her fine, strong legs bore the scars and cuts of hard months in the brush. Across her rump, a rifle gray stood out coarse and ugly there among those gently kept animals. This would be the last I would ever ask of her. Well, that is, after I found me a good riding horse. Janine came up beside me as I rode toward the track.
What's going on here?
What are you talking about?
I heard my father and Bracker talking. Why are you and Jack Smith acting like you don't know each other?
I tried to look as innocent as I could.
Oh, damn you, Jess. You didn't have to do this. Why couldn't you just run the race like anybody else?
Bracker and DeBow stood near the rail.
Look, he's going to ride the race himself.
Beside me, I looked around and saw DeBow's silver-gray stallion try to bump us. I veered my mare over just in time and glared at the weasel-faced jockey beside me.
Keep that plug out of the way, or I'll run over her.
On my other side, between me and the rail, Star of Dawn rode up. His jockey offered a friendly smile.
Pay him no mind. DeBow must pay him extra to be an asshole.
He gigged Star of Dawn forward.
Good luck.
At the starting line, just for a second, I had some doubts. Of the six horses, my bay mare was the smallest. Of the six jockeys, I was the largest. From the center starting position, I looked around at the fancy horses, riders, and rigging on either side of me and realized for the first time what a total ass I would be if I didn't pull this off. Not only would I embarrass Janine in front of her family, I would lose the money and the winnings I was counting on to pay her father. When I saw the starting pistol raised into the air, I braced myself in the short, drawn saddle and pushed the doubt out of my mind. The mare came off the line like she'd been shot from a cannon. Neck and neck, Star of Dawn bolted forward on my left from the inside, and the silver gray stallion closed toward me on the right. I saw right off Star of Dawn's jockey meant to win the race. The silver gray meant to beat the hell out of me. To win the money, I only had to beat the silver gray. Leveling into the first lap, I let the mare drift toward the rail, cutting across the front of two horses with lead to spare. Beside me, the silver gray pounded close. Too close, I thought. As the big silver closed in, my mare veered toward him just enough to turn him back. Then she pounded in close to Star of Dawn on the rail. Now that the weasel-faced jockey knew what to expect, he goaded the silver gray with determination and moved sideways almost into us as my mare scooted forward just in time. Star of Dawn had the lead by two lengths. At first, I thought the crowd was directing their dislike at me, but out of the corner of my eye, I saw angry fists shaking and fingers pointing at the silver gray right behind me. I reckon no matter how little use they had for me, nobody held with the kind of race that little weasel bastard was running. Into the second lap, I felt my mare belly down a little, but I could tell she was holding back. I gigged her a short tap, but it was like she never felt it. She had a pace set, and she wouldn't break it. I left it up to her. On the inside, Star of Dawn had pulled forward another length. For the money, all I had to do was stay in front of the silver gray. He came forward every few seconds, but couldn't hold pace to my mare. Seeing that, his jockey got dirtier. Each time the silver gray pulled forward, the jockey veered against us, slamming us almost into the rail before my mare could pull out. I could feel a constant battle wearing down my mare. Going into the third lap, the silver gray was coming up quicker and staying beside us longer. Star of Dawn was ahead by five lengths. I had to do something. Halfway around the third lap, I felt the sting of the riding crop across my side. The second time it happened, I felt my mare jolt, almost losing stride. The son of a bitch was whipping my mare. That did it. He didn't want a race. He wanted a gorilla fight. We could do that easy enough. Over and over, I felt the riding crop cut across me as I slipped my right hand from the reins and clawed at my belt. The son of a bitch was gonna make a whole day of whipping me and my mare. When I had my belt out of my trousers, I swapped ends with it and wrapped the tongue good and tight around my right hand. The weasel was too busy whipping me to see what I was doing. I drew my mare up slightly, just enough to let the silver gray gain more than he had so far. The jockey was pleased. Just as he settled in to pass us, just as he faced forward and lowered his riding crop, just as he concentrated on getting ahead, I swung the belt in high. The steel buckle split his face in a long red gash. He started falling from the saddle, knocked cold. Feeling the shift in weight, the silver gray careened across the track and leaped over the outside rail to keep from crashing into it. At the second, the rider left the saddle, blasted through the fence, and tumbled in a spray of blood, dust, and splinters. Star of Dawn was six lengths up and bellying down into the fourth. I'd beaten DeBow's stallion and had won the money. That was the main thing. I dared anybody to claim foul after the way that bastard had done me. Now I could ease up and slide in a respectable second. The nearest horse behind me was a good eight lengths back and fading. But my mare had a different idea. With the silver gray off her side, she bellied down hard. I tapped her easy to let her know it was her choice, and she fired out of stride, gaining four lengths in what seemed like a split second. Round in the far turn, I had Jethro over near the trees where I had stationed him. He had a worried look on his face. He shrugged, and I saw his hands were empty. Then, I saw Janine step out from behind a tree with the goose gun cradled in her arms. By now, we were gaining on Star of Dawn. Janine smiled. Laying down deeper on the mare's neck, all I could see was brown dirt flashing beneath me and a flurry of hooves. It was her race. All I could do was hang on. One length back now. Both horses held steady for what seemed like forever. Then, slowly, inch by inch, my mare shortened the lead. She was belly down as far and as fast as I'd ever seen her. For a second, I actually closed my eyes. I didn't gig her. I didn't slap her with the reins. I reckoned I was just willing her on, and she must have sensed it.
When I opened my eyes, we were right beside Star of Dawn. His jockey glanced over in surprise, then smiled, and leaned down farther, slapping with the crop. The seconds we spent going down the final stretch were like two men and two horses tangled up in each other's dream. Suddenly, the race was over, and the mare let down into a fast trot. I tasted grit and dust. Beside me, Star of Dawn's jockey raised up in the short-drawn stirrups.
Congratulations, but I'll beat your ass next time.
No, sir. This is too rough a sport for me. Halfway around the track, I stopped my mare beside the rail where Janine stood. Jethro had taken the goose gun and disappeared back through the woods.
Except for nearly killing one of the jockeys, I think you ran a pretty clean race.
Reaching down, I swept her up over the rail and onto my lap.
See what I mean about you and horses. You didn't have to cheat and scheme. All you had to do was trust yourself.
We rode back to the starting line where the crowd stood. Jack came out and helped Janine down from the mare.
I would have killed him for you if that bunch hadn't stopped me. I wanted you to know that.
Thanks, Jack. How is that bastard anyway?
Can you believe this? That little turd is still alive.
He reached inside his shirt and took out a bundle of money.
But here's the good news. I made DeBeau pay up the second your nose crossed the finish line.
Put it away before Bracker and DeBeau see it.
Aw, hell, they've crawled out of here looking like two egg-sucking dogs.
Janine looked at the money, then glanced up at me. She looked worried. What's the matter? I slipped down from the saddle, leading my mare with my arm around Janine. We walked over to the crowd by the rail.
Jess, you can't fool with these people. I mean it. You don't know how my father and his friends are. Don't underestimate them.
At the rail, Cronin Wilcox stepped between me and Janine and threw his arms around us.
I want all of you to know how proud I am of my son-in-law.
I looked at his face close up and never saw a more sincere expression in my life. I couldn't help but smile.
This young man not only raises top thoroughbreds, he can even ride them if he's a mind to, and win.
What's the horse's name?
At first, I didn't know what to say. I'd never named a horse in my life. The mare stepped up and nudged her muzzle against my shoulder, trying to think of something. I reached my arm up around her neck. She was sweaty and smeared with dust turning to mud. I looked past the mare and saw Janine beaming proudly. And it came to me in a flash. There was no more fitting name than what came to my mind.
Jeannie's Pride. Her name is Jeannie's Pride.
I glanced around toward Jeannie. She smiled and waved to the crowd. Cronin Wilcox tightened his arms around our shoulders, nodding his approval. Wilcox turned, smiling at Janine, and she returned his smile. And just for a second, as Janine's and her father's eyes met, I couldn't help but notice she looked more worried now than before.
I don't like the feel of this one bit.
Jack searched the road as far as his eyes could see. I looked at him sitting there atop his gray gelding, hunched up in his duster against the fine spring mist. At 10 in the morning, it was as dark as late afternoon. The sky was heavily clouded. We'll give him a little longer. I don't want to leave without getting paid. And I don't want word to get around that we didn't stick to the job.
I don't need money this bad. And I don't give a blue damn what them upriver bastards say about me. As far as I'm concerned, we light out of here right now. They ain't gonna show.
Jack took out a bottle of morphine laudanum. The same kind of medicine Cousin Jesse took for his chest pains. Jack took a swig as if it were whiskey. After a minute, he settled right down. I'd seen him take a drink of the medicine months back at the Samuel place, but just to see what it tasted like.
You sick, Jack?
Got a tickling in my chest. Nothing to it.
No sooner had Jack calmed down, I heard the sound we'd been waiting for. I hooked my mare lightly and circled out onto the muddy road for a better look. When I could clearly make out the Reno gang, I eased back off the road and motioned for Jack to lead the six-horse string back into the woods. The horses were outfitted with used saddles and reins for a quick changeover. As the riders broke into the woods, Jack gigged his horse over near the edge of the clearing and whipped his repeating rifle from the saddle scabbard. From his position, if need be, he could drop in behind the trees and pick their eyes out.
Here they come.
Jack cocked his rifle and propped it straight up from his lap. I only counted five of the gang ride into the clearing, and judging the look on Frank Reno's face, I knew before asking, something went wrong.
Where's your sixth man?
Dead in the street.
Reno and the rest of the gang slid down off the wet saddles and started for the fresh horses.
Well, hold on. Where's my money? Nobody touches a horse till I get paid. That's the deal.
The deal's gone to hell, and we ain't got time to explain it.
Well, make time.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Jack flip the rifle to his shoulder and level down on Frank Reno. All five of them raised their hands nearly chest high, looking wet, scared, and desperate, like trapped rats. They could either surrender or go for their guns. It was up to Frank Reno to call the play.
Damn it. And the whole thing went to hell on us. We got no more than a few $100 at best. And Whitmer got blown down carrying the money. But we gotta get out of here. They're no more than 20 minutes behind us.
What about my money?
For God's sake, man, we ain't got no money. I'll have to make it up to you the next time.
Either I get paid right here, right now, or there ain't gonna be no next time.
Don't crowd me on this. We'll fight you if we have to. I'm telling you, on the square, it went bad, and we ain't got no money.
His men had been spreading out slowly as he spoke. He must have been telling the truth. There was no reason for him to waste this much time if he had the money to pay me. At the same time, if the posse was as close as he said, and judging from his expression, I believed him, I was wasting too much time myself. It wouldn't benefit anybody but the law if we threw down on each other right now. And from the looks of his bunch, that's what would happen if I didn't give in.
All right. Take the horses and get the hell out of here.
I motioned Jack to lower the rifle and jumped the mare forward out of the middle of the horses.
I won't forget this. As soon as we get something else lined up, I'll pay you double. I swear it.
Yeah, sure.
I rode over beside Jack.
I can't believe this. You're not smart enough to rob a damn payroll?
I reckon not.
Think we ought to blast away at them?
Nah, they've got enough problems without us. And poor dumb bastards are gonna stretch Hampshire as hell.
I could shoot just one, right in the back as they ride out.
Nah, best we can do is get these horses somewhere, clean them up, and try to sell them out to somebody. At least we make something out of this mess. By late evening, we arrived in Gallatin, bones soaked and low in the saddle. After quartering our animals at the livery, we took a room at the Borden Hotel and dried out by hanging our clothes on chairs in front of the fireplace. We sat there in our long wools, cleaning and oiling our hardware. As miserable as we felt about the day's work, I couldn't help thinking how much worse it turned out for Frank Reno and his bunch. They were pounding through mud and storms with a posse on their heels and hadn't a damn thing to show for it. I reckon we were lucky at that.
You think they didn't press hard enough for the big money?
Who knows? One thing for sure, Reno ain't gonna fare well in this part of the country. Not robbing banks, anyway.
Yeah, as many soldiers as there are around here, a man's a damn fool to think he could ride in shooting up the place and ride out with the big money. People don't scare as easy when they know there's a town full of stripe legs waiting outside the door.
I knew Jack was just making conversation, but what he said sparked an idea in my mind. There was no doubt the Reno bunch rode in whooping and shooting the same way our bunch did over in Liberty. That being the case, the bankers must have balked against handing over the payroll money, knowing with all the soldiers in town, the Reno gang didn't have time to bully them out of it. After Liberty, every bank in the country had to be smart enough to work up a plan against the same thing happening to them. I sat up late that night, cutting shots from a bottle of rye and staring into the fire, thinking. Next morning over breakfast, I explained to Jack what I had planned last night while he slept, and when I finished telling him, he looked at me like I had gone plumb out of my mind.
You mean you're gonna go in there by yourself, right to the teller, and say, what? Excuse me, sir, I want you to give me all the payroll money, please.
Listen, dammit, there's a bank full of money sitting there. The Reno gang is every lawman in town chasing them. The town is off guard, I'm telling you. The only thing they know to watch for is a gang of whooping, shooting raiders. You said yourself a man's a damn fool to ride in here like that with all those soldiers.
I say a man's a bigger fool to think he can go in there by himself and squeeze out that payroll. If that gang didn't scare it loose, how you figure one man's going to?
Because I'll have all the time in the world, and the banker will know it. Once I walk through them two guards outside the door, real peaceful-like, he'll know I've got time to pull every tooth in his head with a pair of shoeing tongs if I want to.
I think you dropped too deep in that bottle last night to tell you the truth. But it's your call. I hope you ain't fixing to get us hung.
Jack, if these soldiers catch us, we deserve to be hung. I'd hate to think I couldn't do no better than Frank Reno and his bunch, wouldn't you?
Well, that's for sure. But Jess, I swear to God, much as we're friends, If you ain't there when you ought to be, I'm cutting out on you.
Leaving there, our first stop was the sheriff's office, where we found a note on the locked door. We were going to have Jack report a horse stolen just to size up the situation, but sure enough, the note said the sheriff was out on a posse. Anybody needing help should go to Ben Mudd at Mudd's Mercantile. I grinned at Jack as we headed there. Inside Mudd's, I went straight to the big feller behind the counter.
Can I help you?
Yes, sir. I'm John O'Keefe, and this here's my foreman. I had a string of horses stolen from my place over in Cass County near a week ago. We've tracked the fellers that took them all the way to about 5 miles from here, and that damn storm washed out the tracks last night, and I wanted to ask the sheriff's help.
Like the note said, sheriff and his deputy and half the townsmen are running posse right now. Don't know when they'll be back. Over half the armored battalion riding with them, too. So I don't expect you'll get much help from them, either.
What in the world happened?
Ooh, you've never seen such as we had here yesterday. Six riders tried to rob the bank of an army payroll deposit. You ought to saw it. Two soldiers wounded and one robber shot right through the head.
You don't suppose that's the same bunch we're tracking, do you?
I wouldn't be surprised. This was a mean bunch. They've got that one body at the provost officer station outside of town if you think you can identify him.
Well, that's a good idea. We'll ride out there and have a look later on.
When we left Mudd's, we didn't say any more about it. Jack split off and headed for the horses, then left town on his gray gelding, leading the big roan we kept from the livery sale. I took out of town on my bay mare and run her out just a little to loosen her up, and spent the next 2 hours roaming around the near town, letting Jack get to where I needed him to be waiting when I made my run. At 10 o'clock, I loose-hitched my mare in the alley behind the bank, stuffed a new rope and some rags down into my saddlebags, and walked a good distance through the alley before going out to the street and heading back toward the bank. With my bag slung over my shoulder, I tipped my hat as I walked between the two uniformed door guards standing at ease outside the bank. One of them glanced me up and down, but I reckoned they thought nobody would try anything this soon after what happened yesterday. Besides, I was carrying a full saddlebag going in. A thief would have been carrying an empty, and he wouldn't be on foot like I was. I stepped straight across the wooden floor right through the swinging gate to the president's desk.
Morning, gentlemen.
He and the teller looked surprised, then cautious, then delighted as I swung the saddlebags down on his desk.
There's $3,000 gold coin, sir. I trust your bank is safe enough to keep it for me?
Coming out of his surprise, the president stood up, tugging at his vest.
Oh, yes, sir. No question about it.
With only the three of us in the bank, the teller, a young feller, curious to see that much gold at once, came from behind the cage and stood beside the president.
Perhaps I can help, Mr. Schaefer.
The president shot him a look of disdain, then smiled at me.
Mr. Barnes here is new and over-eager. You'll have to excuse. Oh.
His words froze as my .44 stared up at him from my waist.
Just keep smiling. If one of them soldiers looks through the window and figures out what's going on here, you'll both die. So you better smile like your life depends on it.
I glanced back across my shoulder real quick, then back toward the two frightened men. Through the window, I saw the back of one soldier's head. His neck muscles were working like he was talking and laughing.
Now both you boys know who I am from yesterday. That was my brother got shot down like a dog in the street. I've come back for that payroll or for blood vengeance. I don't care which. You all tell me, you want to give me that money or die choking on your own guts?
They couldn't have been more helpful.
You're early. What happened? Are you hit?
Yeah.
I rolled clumsily out of my saddle under the load of money.
I've been hit by a ton of greenbacks, and I ain't likely to recover.
Pulling off my hat and shaking my head, money fell everywhere. Loose bills and wrapped bundles.
Lord God, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus.
And thank you, Frank Reno.
I held open my duster, showing the money in my waist.
Lord God, just did you rob the whole town or the whole damn county?
It feels like it. Look at this.
I pulled the overstuffed saddlebags from across my saddle and pitched it to the ground. More money spilled out.
Holy Moses. Now, wait a minute. It ain't safe carrying this kind of money around. We need to put it in a bag somewhere.
No way. Not with that Reno bunch prowling around.
Jack pointed to the money.
So, what do we do with it?
Well, this money's clean enough. We could spend it today, if we had a mind to. But I say, take a dab of it and bury the rest somewhere deep in the woods for a while. What do you say?
Well, that's fine with me. But whatever we do, we better get to doing it before they get any closer.
Deeper back into the woods, we found a cliff overlooking a creek 20 feet below. While Jack turned over some heavy rocks and dug a hole under them, I spread my duster on the ground and piled the money on it, wrapping it into a large, tight bundle. After burying that part of the money and marking our spot, we went 15 yards upstream and did the same thing with the bulging saddlebags. Each of us kept $700 apiece, choosing the oldest, least identifiable bills we could find. After an hour's ride through deep timber, we came to a logging road that looked grown over and deserted. We followed it nearly 2 miles before coming to a run-down cabin in a small clearing. Riding slowly to the cabin, we were met by a skinny hound with one shredded ear and scars that could have only been caused by a bear fight.
Hello, the house!
Hello, yourself. Don't come any closer.
A faded curtain pulled to one side of a window, revealing the dark shine of a double-barreled shotgun.
We mean no harm. We're travelers in need of food and water, with money to pay for both. Hey, I hate to shoot your dog. Reckon you could call him back?
Shoot that dog and I'll shoot you. What are you doing here?
I really...
Hold it, Jack.
I lunged my mare toward the dog. If I hadn't reined her up, she would have stomped his guts out. The dog went across the yard and slid under the porch.
Damn it, ma'am. We said we mean no harm. Now pull that damn trigger and kill us, or kill that damn dog, or kill yourself. We don't give a damn.
I jerked the mare around toward the trail.
Come on, Jack, let's get out of here.
We turned and headed out.
You don't have to use that kind of language, young man.
I smiled and winked at Jack as we turned our horses back around. She was standing on the porch with the shotgun cradled in her arms.
I never stand for that kind of talk around this house.
We tipped our hats.
Well, I truly apologize for it, ma'am. We are tired and hungry and plumb done in from the road. We will gratefully pay for food and water if you see fit.
She was a strong, handsome woman in her late 30s, early 40s, I guessed, with clean features and large breasts like the women I'd seen in oil paintings. Jack was already out from under his hat and smoothing back his hair against its will.
Maybe we could speak to your husband.
After supper that night, I sat outside watching the trail with my rifle across my lap. Jack walked up and sat down beside me, rubbing his full belly.
You ought to hear the story she just told me.
You telling each other stories already?
Listen to this. You know she said her husband has been dead over a year, right?
I heard her say that.
Well, the banker that holds a mortgage on this place has been trying to get her on the mattress since before her old man turned blue. Since she won't oblige him, he's coming here tonight to collect the money she owes him. If she ain't got it, he can have her pitched out.
Then why don't she give him what he wants? Looks to me like she could stand to wrestle a snake around or two.
But you see, Jess, I've got me an interest here.
That's what I thought.
Well, think of it a minute. We've got money buried near here, and here's this warm-blooded widow woman living here alone, which you've got to admit ain't safe with all the hard cases running loose.
I squinted and shook my head.
You know what I mean, Jess? I don't mean people like us. I mean people who would take advantage of somebody like her.
She turned us around with a shotgun, don't forget.
Ah, the hell with it.
Jack stood up to walk away.
You saying you want to stay here with her a while?
Thinking about it. I've got nothing planned except to spend that money when we dig it up. I could stay on here if she'll have me.
I reckon she'll have you. How much you talking about spending to pay off the banker?
$300 is all.
Well, it's your money. Do what you like. I reckon I got time to rob that banker on my way back to Kansas City.
I stood up and stretched.
What do you mean, rob him? I'm talking about giving him $300.
Yeah, and as sure as you give him $300 when he gets here, I'll take $300 from him when he leaves.
I like that, Jess. I like that a lot.
I arrived in Kansas City 2 weeks later after stopping over at Springfield long enough to sharpen up my poker skills. The gamblers in Kansas City couldn't hold a candle to the boys around Springfield when it come to white-knuckled draw. I came away losing $200 and felt privileged to do so. Besides, I had over $900 on me, counting the $300 I'd taken off that banker in the woods, and enough to last a lifetime waiting in the woods with Quiet Jack guarding it like a pit bull. I decided that all deals were off with old man Wilcox. To hell with him. He'd stalled too long anyway. With the kind of money I had, I could take Jeannie and buy us a spread somewhere. We could make babies, raise babies, and could keep my lovely wife half out of her pantaloons for the next 50 or so years. Once a man comes into big money, the world is a whole different place. I'd thrown in with Reno for short money, horse money, to scrape up enough to take care of Jeannie and the baby. Now that I'd been struck a solid punch of good fortune, I leveled out and did some clear thinking. I knew Jeannie and I were worlds apart. For that reason, I'd been willing to pack it in and disappear from her life like a bad dream. But if an ocean of difference lay between our worlds, I could now build a bridge of greenbacks. Now that I had money, there wasn't a doubt in my mind. I worshipped that young wife of mine, loved her like God loves sunshine. I wanted to be a part of her world. I wanted to taste and savor the kind of world that created someone as fine and lovely as my Jeannie. With money, love, and time, I would be a part of that world and make her proud to be my wife. At that point, my clear thinking jumped the track a bit. There was a picture running through my mind of Jeannie and me taking a spread in Kentucky. It wasn't a place like the one I grew up on in Grayson County. I was picturing something over near Lexington, something in thoroughbred country. I had enough money to get us in, and I was convinced I could out-dick her horses with them rich fellers and make enough to keep us there. The more I thought on it, the more I expanded on the picture. By the time I sprinted to the front door of the Wilcox mansion, I was picturing my being a lawyer, same as old Morris Finch. Miller Crowe, I envisioned. Esquire, respected pillar of the legal community and dealer in thoroughbred horse flesh. From what I've seen of these rich boys with a title like that, I could pluck them like a flock of lost geese. My daydreams had clouded my gorilla instincts. Reaching for the brass door knocker, I felt a chill run up my spine. My mind skipped back to a few seconds earlier. Riding through the gate past the row of hedges, my mare had twitched her ears, then laid them straight back in warning.
Jess, look out!
Damn! I dropped low and spun around, drawing my .44. Suddenly, two slugs tore into the door just over my head. My mare reared high, tearing loose the hitching ring and bolting up onto the porch. I rolled toward her, firing at the rifle smoke in the hedges.
I'll cover you.
Jeannie must have gotten one of her father's rifles. I caught a glimpse of her leaning across the balcony rail, pumping out shots like a buffalo hunter.
No! The baby!
I ripped the sod off from my saddle and blew open the front door. I didn't know what waited inside. All I could think of was stopping Jeannie. The firing shifted up, slamming against the balcony rail. Catching into the saddle, I emptied my revolver toward the hedges as we bolted through the door. We trampled over one rifleman as he fired. The bullet clipped me under the arm as I caught the barrel and jerked it from his hands. Another fellow leveled down on me, but I swung the rifle butt around, slamming it into his face as we tore past him. As if knowing what I wanted from her, my mare started up the wide, winding stairs to the second floor. Halfway up, a gunman appeared on the stairs. His bullet slammed into my left shoulder, then he tried to turn and run as the mare plowed into him. He flew over the railing and landed spread-eagled on the floor. At the top of the stairs, round in the corner, the mare slipped on a long rug. Going down and rolling, she went one direction and I tumbled off in another. Beneath us, riflemen had taken position on the first floor. Shot spit at me as I scrambled toward Jeannie's bedroom door. My left shoulder bleeding like a stuck hog's. I pitched into the bedroom and saw Jeannie kneeling against the far wall. Her head was bowed as if in prayer, and her hands clutched her stomach. Crawling to her, I felt the puddle of water around her.
Jeannie, are you hit? Are you all right?
She opened her eyes and shoved me away.
I'm all right. Get out of here. Go.
But the baby.
No, we'll be all right. I was scared. I wet myself. Now go.
Stay there.
I got to my feet and limped out onto the balcony. Then I ran to the far end of the balcony and climbed up on the rail. Glancing around for something to land on, I saw my only chance was to jump out into the branches of a large spruce. Beneath me, two riflemen had come out of the house and were taking aim. I lunged out into the cool breeze. In the second I lunged, I recognized the face of one rifleman. Then spruce needles stung my face and arms as I grabbed, floundered, and slid down the branches. Dazed, I rolled over on my back and
stared up at Daniel Zanone's ugly, smiling face. I saw him through a watery, half-conscious veil. I watched Zanone lower the pistol down close to my forehead. He fanned his hand behind the hammer to keep my skull from splattering in his face.
I've got you, Mr. Jesse, by God, James. Kiss your ass goodbye.
But then, before I could pull the trigger, as my watery veil lifted, I saw another gun barrel. This one came out of nowhere and leveled right against Zanone's ear. I saw a big thumb cock back the hammer as Zanone's face turned chalk white. I watched Zanone's eyes shift slowly as mysterious Dave Mather leaned in close. Mather had a relaxed smile, but his words cut sharp as a Glades knife.
Nobody kills a prisoner of mine, Zanone. Now pitch it away or I'll dump your slop all over the lawn.
Zanone flipped the revolver out of his hand.
When the sheriff gets back, I'll have him fire your ass.
Sure you will. But for now, I'm in charge, and I ain't standing for this kind of thing. So tell your flunkies to drop their iron. I'm taking this man in for a trial. That's the law.
Mather leaned down and grabbed me by the collar.
And you outlaw son of a bitch. Give me a nickel's worth of back talk and I'll save the county the cost of a hanging.
I saw his gun barrel swing back at a high arc.
But did you have to hit me with that pistol?
I didn't know what you were apt to say, the shape you were in. Besides, don't you think that made it look good?
For days, my head had been pounding like a parade drum. When Mather managed to slip a bottle of whiskey into my cell, it dulled the pain a little, but the alcohol thinned my blood, causing my shoulder wound to start bleeding again.
What about Jeannie and the baby? What have you heard?
Nothing yet, but as soon...
Jesus, Dave! I'm going crazy worrying.
Settle down. I'll find out.
I leaned against the bars.
What's gonna happen now? Can they pin that bank in Gallatin on me?
Both the president and the teller say they can identify you. They think you're Jesse James. There's also a banker from Roscoe. Says you robbed him of $300. They'll all be here in 2 weeks for the trial. You tell me what they'll say.
Quit fishing around like a lawman. Tell me if I'm gonna hang.
I don't know. I'm working on something.
What?
Give me time. I'll see what I can do. Meanwhile, rest up and get yourself well. I'll take care of everything.
How are you, Dave? How can I repay you?
Like I said, I'm working on it.
I watched him walk through the door to the outer office and wondered just how far I could trust Mysterious Dave. Zanone wanted me bad, and I wondered just what price it would take to turn Mather's head. Mather was not known to act against his best interest. It had me worried. Of course, if it hadn't been for Mather, Zanone would have skull-popped me that day at the Wilcoxes. Also, if Mather hadn't taken care of me, I reckon I wouldn't have made it through the 2 weeks that followed. He saw to it that I got medical care, and he stayed close by to keep Zanone and his vultures away while I got some of my strength back. When Mather came back the next night with news about Jeannie, his face was gray and solemn. He slipped me a new bottle of whiskey through the bars, and I knew what that meant. I thought I was ready to hear the news, but I reckon there's some things you can't be ready for.
Your wife lost the baby. They've taken her to a private sanitarium outside of town. That's why I've had a hard time learning anything. I talked the judge out of charging her with firing on Zanone's posse. Since Zanone showed no proof of who he was, I explained to the judge that your wife thought they were enemies of yours from back during the war.
Thanks. How about Jeannie? Is she all right?
She's a strong woman. She'll make it. I found out her father and mother left town the day before Zanone rode in. Old man Wilcox even gave the servants some time off to visit their kin. Seems the only reason your wife was there is because she came over to get some needlework she forgot. She was supposed to be staying over with a friend. When she came back, Zanone's posse was in the house, and so they held her there.
So this was Wilcox's doing?
It's not my place to say. I'm telling you what I know. How you call it is up to you. But Zanone and Wilcox are tighter than blades of grass in a pig turd. Zanone is convinced you're Jesse James, so Wilcox probably thinks it too.
That means Jesse and Frank are gonna catch the blame for the robberies because Zanone says so.
It's a crazy world, Mr. Crow, you know that.
I took a long cut from the bottle of whiskey and passed it through the bars.
Drink with me, Dave. It's a bad time to drink alone. He turned up a quick shot and passed the bottle back.
I've got a rule about blaming myself for stuff.
What's that?
I only do it when I can't think of somebody else to blame.
Good rule. But right now, I can't think of another soul.
Yeah, you've pretty well ruined everything but the weather.
Yeah, now I reckon I'll hang and be done with it.
Oh, you'll probably hang. But not here. Not this time.
Huh? Even though the jail was empty except for the two of us, Mather glanced around before opening his coat and slipping the .44 between the bars.
You up to breaking out of here? Or are you feeling too sorry for yourself?
I glanced at the dull shine of the revolver he offered and thought of how good it would feel pressed against Zanone's and Cronin Wilcox's heads. Yes, I snatched the revolver. That is, no, I ain't feeling too sorry.
I didn't think so. Here's a plan. Tomorrow the sheriff will be back in town. Him and Zanone might work up a scheme between them. Zanone's got enough money to buy the sheriff and drag you out of here on a meat hook. I know, because he offered me the deal.
I shoved the revolver down the back of my trousers. I felt ashamed for ever doubting Mather.
So while I'm making my constable's rounds tomorrow night, the sheriff will be here alone. Make your break before him and Zanone get their heads together. Tomorrow night might be the only chance you get.
Dave, I'll be honest. I was worried that you might sell me out. I'm sorry I doubted you. You're a friend.
I think nothing of it. I sold your mare to a fella by the name of Bracker. He was real eager to get her, already paid me top money. Of course, I told him he couldn't pick her up till after your trial. She'll be waiting for you in the livery stable on the corner, saddled and ready to go.
Dave, I mean it. I owe you a lot for all you've done. How can I repay you?
There is one thing. Kill the sheriff for me on your way out.
Dave, think what you're asking me to do.
I won't ask you twice. I figure if he's dead, I'll make sheriff. And we both know I'll be a damn good one. But you've got the gun. You decide, Mr. Crow. Wait till you meet him, and then make up your mind. Fair enough.
He turned to walk away, then stopped at the door to the office. He smiled again before he disappeared through the door.